I'm glad to say that I am joined by my guest this morning, Tim Gambrell, who is on the phone from sunny Exeter. Tim, are you there, sir?
I am indeed, Kerry. Hello.
Fabulous. Glad to have you on board, Tim. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me this morning to talk about your work with Candy Jar, our favourite publishers here in Cardiff, and all of the work that they've been doing over the years with Doctor Who and the various franchises, the spin-off series and One Thing and Another. So tell us how you managed to get into the strange world of Doctor Who.
Well, I've been a fan of Doctor Who since I was, well, before I can remember, if my mother is to be believed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was read Doctor Who books as I was growing up and watched the series avidly, and it's always been a part of my life.
Yes.
And alongside that, into my teens, I had an urge to write, and I used to write short stories and comedy scripts and that sort of
okay.
that sort of juvenilia that a lot of writers I think probably go through when they're in their teens and stuff, and they think, oh, aren't I clever and aren't I witty, and you read back over it years later and think, oh dear, that's terrible. And that it didn't really go anywhere for some years until Candy Jar started up their Lethbridge Stewart range.
Yes, yes.
And I got to through social media, actually, I got to know Andy Frankham Allen, who was the range editor of the Lethbridge Stewart range. I won a competition. I think he used my name in one of his books. That's great. That's really that's lovely. There's me as a part of that history. I read the book and you know what? I felt terrible afterwards. I thought, no, this I don't like this at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because I somehow felt responsible for the actions of the character, even though it wasn't me just holding my name. So I had a foot in the door, I suppose, there with Andy, and
yes.
Then I got to know Sean, and again over a period of time, because of the conversations that were going on, Andy asked if I would like to submit a short story,
yes,
Candy Jar, for consideration, which I did, and then just that led eventually to me getting some work published. And that was actually my first fiction published.
Wow, wow.
All those years later, and really thanks to the help and guidance that Andy gave me initially, showing me where I've been going wrong all those years.
And I mean, that's really, really important, isn't it, in any walk of life, to have a little bit of a leg up the ladder to get you up and running. But I mean, in this instance, obviously, with you saying, like so many people, that you've been a big, big fan of Doctor Who pretty much all your life, I mean, it's almost a dream come true then, isn't it, to be able to get involved with an offshoot of it, and one that really seems to have been very, very successful over these last few years.
Yes, no, definitely. It is one of those sort of pinch yourself moments to think, yes, I am able to put pen to paper and, you know, write stories about the Brigadier and others. And then more recently, the original unit team from the 1968 television story, The Invasion.
It's a long time back, but it is amazing the number of people who do actually still remember those sorts of episodes. And clearly, for people of a certain age, the halcyon days of Doctor Who, with people like John Pertwee as the Doctor, very much, as we said, front and centre of a lot of youngsters' childhoods back then.
Well, the Invasion it's one of those stories that has certain iconic moments which seem to sort of exist almost outside of the story.
Yes.
At the end of episode 6, when the Cybermen have been swarming through the sewers under London, and at the end of episode 6, they all emerge through the sewer hatches and they march through London.
Yeah,
and they're marching down the steps outside St Paul's Cathedral. And that's in particular seems to be a very iconic image that a lot of viewers at the time remember. I used to work with a lady years ago who was utterly terrified by that. And she when she found out I was a Doctor Who fan, she said, "Oh, Cybermen and London and all of that stuff." And
it's
wonderful to be able to play in that sandpit.
Well, isn't it? But I mean, the Cybermen, as you say, really, really were, I think, quite creepy. And I mean, I have to profess, when I was a kid, I mean, I quite liked the Daleks. I mean, you know, I was almost rooting for them at times, but not. Not the Cybermen. I have to draw the line there because they were nasty.
Yes, yes, indeed, just silent and menacing.
I should say. So let's talk about the Vaughan Identity, the new book about UNIT, the Vaughan Identity, out now, and. How long has it taken you to sort of go from start to finish where Sean at Candy Jar said, right, Tim, this is what we want you to do next, to get to this stage now where you can be chatting to me on the radio, safe in the knowledge that it's all done and dusted and is a very good present for Christmas?
Well, it goes back a couple of years, really,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Two or three years, I think.
Right.
Certainly when the... When the idea was first put to me, that I'd asking me if I'd take on the range editor role, and at the time I remember I talked to my wife about it as well, and because I knew it would take up a lot of my spare time.
Absolutely, yes.
And I figured that it would be if I didn't accept it, then I would always regret it.
Mm.
So I thought that, you know, I'll do that. So taking on the role was the first thing, and then starting to look at planning and what we wanted to achieve with the series of books.
Well, absolutely, because as we've just said, obviously you being sort of the overall editor, clearly it involves you working with other writers and as you say, obviously guiding people in the directions that you see the series going in.
Yes, yes, indeed. And one of the first things that we agreed on between us, myself and Sean, and Andy, as I said before, Andy Frank and Mellon, was that we wanted UNIT to be distinct from the Lethbridge Stewart books that had come before, for example. So readers picking up a UNIT book didn't suddenly feel that they had, I don't know, 8-9 years of Lethbridge Stewart books to catch up on you know, it needs to be like a fresh start from that perspective, not carrying lots of baggage.
But
it was thinking about issues like that, how we dealt with issues like that, who the main cast members would be, and then really it was clear to me that I needed to write the first novel. We've done a couple of short story collections already, but the first sort of, you know, full length novel, I thought I need to write that because I need to be laying things down for
absolutely.
The other writers.
It's the foundations, isn't it? Absolutely,
it is.
The foundations. Yeah. And I guess obviously, you know, it's given you plenty of headaches, I'm sure, over the last couple of years, because obviously you then are the go-to man when some of the other writers have issues with things or they get stuck on certain things. You have to be the arbiter who can then say, no, this is what we'll do then, or we won't do that, we will do this. So, you know, you're wearing two hats, aren't you, really, not only being a writer, but as we said, being the big boss as the editor as well.
That's true, yes. And I have to say, collaborating with the other writers that we've used so far, either in the short story collections or in the next couple of novels after mine that will be coming out, is the collaboration side of it has been generally been a joy for me.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
I've really enjoyed that sort of sharing of ideas and possibilities. And, you know, as range editor, it really falls to me to bring initial ideas to the table to see if the writers are happy to run with those ideas.
Yes.
But it's when they come back and they say, how about this as well? And then it's a lovely sort of collaborative two-way process. It's wonderful. I have really, really enjoyed that.
No, I'm sure that's exactly right. And as we said, so much of what we're talking about are sort of characters from that sort of middle period, isn't it, really, of Doctor Who, which was very much a classic age, I guess, for Doctor Who. I mean, I can't profess to being a huge fan of the current sort of genre of Doctor Who stuff, but I think maybe that's just me more than anything. But I mean, it has sort of bridged the period of time, hasn't it? Of, you know, what, middle 60s right up now to date in the 2020s.
Indeed, yes. And there's, you know, there are distinct periods in the show, and I think it probably comes down to more sort of diehard fans who would happily sit and watch any of it.
Yes,
I think if you expect a show to appeal to the same people across, you know, 60 plus years, then that's that. Again, it's like we said before we were on air about writing the books and not being able to please everyone.
Sure, yes.
All the time. You know, something would be wrong, I think, if the same people that were enjoying the show back in the 60s and the 70s are also always gushing about the show now. Think that, you know, there are kind of periods where certain viewers or fans will always appreciate that more than others.
Well, I think that's true. And certainly, as we said, some of the classic characters and the classic baddies, very obviously, we've mentioned the Cybermen and the Daleks and one thing and another. They've become part of people's lives. But yeah, it's wonderful, really, though, that, I mean, it's still such a worldwide hit now. I mean, which obviously now more so than it ever was back in the days, because obviously of the way the world has got smaller, and obviously fans in America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, you name it.
And the fact that we can all watch it at the same time.
Yes.
What equates to the same time, whether it's here or in Australia, like you say, or America.
Absolutely.
Looking
at the work that you've done on the Vaughan Identity, I mean, the work is up to date and sorted, and as we said, there for people to purchase. Where are you going to turn to next with regards to the series of books, or your involvement purely as an editor, or have you got another one that you're writing at the moment?
Well, we've got the Vaughan Identity, which has been out for a couple of months, and that was written very much as a sort of a launch for the series and as a direct sequel to The Invasion. It doesn't feature the Cybermen, of course. We don't have the rights to use the Cybermen, but it features the main core of the UNIT team from The Invasion, and the villains who were working with the Cybermen, Tobias Vaughan and Packer, who apparently reached a horrible end on TV. But as anyone who reads my book will find out, that there are, you know, there were questions about how dead they actually were. So we've got that, and that takes place in, we've set that in July 1973.
Okay.
And August 1973 takes place one of the short story books that's already come out, which was called Operation Fallout, and that was out last year. And then for each of the months after that, we've got another novel. So coming out very shortly now is The Catacombs of Seville by Ian McLaughlin.
Yes.
And which, as the name suggests, is set on location in Seville. That's in September 1973.
Right.
Also in September 1973, because the next two novels take place at the same time. So we've split the cast across two books.
Right.
So there's The Catacombs of Seville, and there's the Secret of Foxfell Forest by Nick Walters, which will be the third book in the range, and that, as I said, that takes place at the same time as Ian's. We're trying a new thing for the range there, where we're having those two books taking place at the same time. Okay. They don't interact with each other, so you don't have to read both books. Each one tells a distinct story.
Yeah.
But they're just, you know, there's that. And then after that, for the October 1973 slot, there will be another book by me, which I'm working on at the moment,
gotcha.
Which is in some ways a follow-up to the Vaughan Identity.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't say too much about it.
No,
because
no,
I don't
understood.
Want to give anything away.
Under wraps. No, absolutely, absolutely.
So that's our immediate plans.
So you've got plenty of balls that you're juggling in the air there, making sure that you keep going. Mm-hmm. And as we said, you're really living and breathing and eating and drinking the whole thing, aren't you?
I am, as my family will confirm as well.
Yeah, well, no, I'm absolutely sure. How much longer do we think Doctor Who can go on for? I mean, obviously, it's science fiction. I mean, can it just continue to run and run and run, do you think? I mean, I don't suppose the diehard fans will ever tire of it, will they?
Possibly not. I mean, I don't know. It does have a format that you think would, you know, could potentially just run and run. Mm. I think as with every long running show, there probably are periods where it's good just to keep it out of the public eye for a while and then
bring it
back, because people get too accustomed. To things, don't they? It's like it's like a very long marriage, for example. Mm. You know, you become accustomed to each other.
Yeah, no, I take
the public
the point.
Become accustomed to Doctor Who being on all the time.
Yeah,
and sometimes it's a good jolt to the system to have it off for a little while.
Yes,
and then you know, relaunch. But I think certainly the format of the show will allow it to just carry on. It depends if there are. If the people that are producing it can come up with engaging stories and
no doubt. And clearly, I mean, the work that you're doing and other writers and so on some of these various spin-off series just gives it a whole new life as well. And as we're just saying now, you're taking sort of things from the 1970s and absolutely bringing them up to date. And it's introducing people to a lot of new characters, because as you rightly said earlier on, obviously there are the legal niceties that mean you can't obviously just use anybody and anyone that you want to in some of them, but it allows you then that fun of creating new baddies as well as new goodies.
Yes, indeed, yes. And it's one of the joys of using existing characters and taking them on journeys that the television series couldn't manage is also creating those new characters, races, or whatever, for them to encounter or interact with, and you know, having the joy of creating new beings from scratch,
surely.
And managing their journey as well. It can be great fun.
Well, it's been great talking to you this morning, Tim. I wish you all of the best, obviously, with the book and your continuing work. And hopefully we'll get the chance to chat again at some time in the future.
I hope so too, Gary. It's been lovely talking to you as well.
Lovely. Well, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you too.